Well, we always enjoy a visit with Dr. Z, Chad Zimmerman from the Clinic Family Health and Sports Chiropractic. Hey, Chad, what's going on?
Hey, just freshly back from a much-needed vacation to see my folks down in Iowa. So
nice.
Well-rested and ready to go.
Okay. Folks are doing well?
They're doing fantastic.
Great.
Yeah.
Great. Yeah, it's good. And getting out to do a road trip, how was life in Iowa versus Fargo, North Dakota?
You know, honestly, it really wasn't much different than here.
Okay.
Yeah.
That's good.
People are kind of out and about and doing things, distancing, wearing masks. It's kind of the same story everywhere.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I talked to a buddy who went to Duluth last weekend, and he said maybe half the restaurants and hotels are open there. They've really been hit hard there. And, of course, in Minnesota, things are a little bit tighter. So it's not that way everywhere, so I'm glad you went somewhere where it was good.
Yeah, it was great, great weather, great golf, great camaraderie with friends and family. So
there you
go. Good times.
Yeah, very good. A lot of us this time of year are doing those projects out in the yard, maybe building a shed or doing some landscaping, things like that. It's really easy when you get to our age, 40s, 50s, 60s, to tweak something, to hurt something, that kind of thing. When do you say, let me go visit Dr. Chad? And when do you say, oh, let me give it a couple of days and see if it gets better?
Unless you absolutely can't move, I'm a big advocate of people giving things 2 or 3 days, because anytime you injure yourself, you're going to stimulate an inflammatory response. And that's going to take anywhere from 24 to 72 hours in order for that to complete. So your symptoms may seem like they're getting a little bit worse, but if you're functioning, usually not a big deal. And after about the third day, things tend to decrease. If things persist beyond that, or if you're so hurt that you can't function at all, that's the time to pick up the phone and call.
And you ice first, right?
Absolutely.
Always ice.
Yeah. It's a chemical reaction. If you put heat on it, it speeds it up and makes it worse. It's kind of like turning the heat up on boiling water. So you want to ice it, calm the situation down. I'm also an advocate of not jumping into taking things like non-steroidal anti-inflammatory drugs right away either, because inflammation is a purposeful thing, much like a fever is, and it helps you recruit the cells to the area that you need in order to help in repair. And there's a number of studies that suggest that if you take non-steroidal anti-inflammatory drugs right away within the first couple of days of an injury, that it might actually help you heal weaker, so you're more susceptible to keep re-injuring the same area.
Now, non-steroidal anti-inflammatories, what do we commonly know those things as?
You'll commonly know those as aspirin, ibuprofen, Aleve.
Ah, okay. Now you're talking my language. I'm following now.
Yeah. Tylenol's not an anti-inflammatory.
Oh, it's not. Okay.
No, it isn't. It's a pain reliever. It's an antipyretic, so it helps reduce fevers, but it really doesn't do much for inflammation.
Okay. And we've learned a lot, haven't we, about some of those things. Certainly a lot. So I went for a 20-mile run yesterday. I popped a couple Advil just because the pounding in my legs, you know, that kind of a thing. But you can overdo it with those things too, right?
It's actually not very hard to overdo it. In fact, when you look at the data, it suggests that about 16,000 people a year die from taking those over-the-counter pain relievers and taking them the right way. So they're not overdoing it. They're taking them based upon the label recommendations, but they do make strong physiological changes in the body that we need to respect.
Yeah, I saw some statistics here that Tylenol is the number one cause of acute liver failure in the United States. Heavy ibuprofen use causes a 66% risk of dementia and a 57% increased risk of Alzheimer's. I got that from your clinic, folks.
Yep, absolutely.
That's some big numbers.
The way they define that as 4 to 5 daily doses per week over a 2-year period. And so the people that were in that group ended up 66% more likely to develop dementia and a 57% increased risk of Alzheimer's.
No, that's crazy.
And so it's disrupting normal inflammatory processes, and they think that may be what's leading to the plaque formations on the brain with Alzheimer's.
I would think of any region of the body, lower back has to be the one that gets you the most often, because everything you do, your lower back, your muscles, your structural, your skeletal structure, it's all affected by everything that you do for that stability that you need for all those things that you do.
Yeah, low back pain is the number four reason why people visit doctors every year.
Number four.
Okay. And it's the number one reason for lost quality of life in people over 60.
Mm.
And so it's something that I think it's so common that if we hurt there, we feel like we're supposed to.
Yeah.
But if you keep having pain coming back in the same spot over and over again, that's a warning signal that your body's giving you, trying to tell you that something's not well with it.
Yep. Okay.
And it's never caused by a painkiller deficiency.
Right. It's always some sort of trauma
it's
or something.
Typically, something's mechanical. The joint's not functioning properly. The muscles aren't functioning properly. Or there's been damage to structures such as the discs. And when they've studied to try to figure out where chronic back pain comes from, the source continually comes back as that soft, spongy disc between the bones.
Yeah.
Because they're susceptible. They tend to tear. They have very poor, almost nearly absent blood supplies. And so they have a really hard time healing. And so once we damage one, it can start becoming this chronic, recurrent issue.
So there's this thing called decompressive therapy that you've talked about before, and that continue. I see that name or that title, that term, that's what I'm looking for, come up here and there, different places now. It seems like more and more people are buying into what you're doing on that.
Well, absolutely, and it works. If you take 100 people that have failed chiropractic, medical, and physical therapy interventions, and 97% of them will still end up either completely pain-free or moderately reduce pain.
It's a big number.
That's a big number. But you really have the big thing with it is that all of those other things already failed, right? And so if somebody's having pain coming from discs in their back, you have to treat the problem with the disc.
Yeah.
The problem with the disc is that the damaged discs have a hard time creating pressure changes to get fluid and nutrients into the discs. And so they need help.
Yeah.
And so we have specially designed machines that can help do that and help get fluid and nutrients back in the disc so that they can heal some and get healthier. And then the symptoms drop.
Do you notice some people I've talked to that have had a back injury of some kind or something happened, they'll say, boy, the first time I just didn't really feel any different, but it took a few times. How long does it take for that decompressive therapy to really start paying off where you feel the difference?
For some people, it's after one. About half of the people that end up pain-free will get there within about 10 treatments, okay? The other about 50% of people that end up pain-free, it can take anywhere from 10 to 20 treatments. And that's okay. Just really based upon how bad the situation is to begin with. A lot of people that come into our office have had these issues for 10 years, 20 years, things like that. And so if there's a lot of deterioration, a lot of damage, sometimes it takes a little bit longer. But I've had people that have had sciatica down their leg for years come in and have one treatment on it, and all of a sudden the sciatica
is
gone.
Wow, that's crazy. Is this something that insurance will typically cover or not necessarily? Depends on your plan. How's that go?
Well, insurance usually doesn't cover it. There's a few small plans out there that are starting to look at it. I've had conversations with companies like Blue Cross, and it would make sense if they did,
because
I think it would prevent an awful lot of back surgeries. But as things are right now, they're a little hesitant with it. But on the upside, it doesn't cost an arm and a leg to do it either. The average medical visit's going to cost you $200 or $300 just to go in and get a pain pill, whereas you can have a number of sessions on the machine for that type of money.
Okay, well, so that's even better then. And honestly, if you're talking about getting rid of lower back pain that you've had for a while, you know, an investment can go a long way. It's a small investment can go a long
absolutely.
Way. You be thankful
absolutely.
For what you did there. Very good stuff. What's the number one thing you're seeing people about right now? Like, is there a certain seasonal kind of thing that seems to creep up in the summer?
You tend to see trends. So you might go a few months without, say, a shoulder issue, and then all of a sudden you have, you know, five people call all at the same time with shoulder issues. So that's one thing that we've been seeing a lot more of lately is our rotator cuff issues.
Uh-huh.
And I don't think most people realize that offices like ours do amazing things with rotator cuffs. If you do the right thing with a rotator cuff issue, you won't need injections and you won't need surgery. In fact, it's something like 95% of rotator cuff impingement syndromes don't require shots or surgery if you do the right
thing. Okay. And the rotator cuff is what, it's like three muscles in the shoulder?
There are four muscles in the shoulder that help support the shoulder girdle, and a couple of them are susceptible to impingement issues. And that's where the tendon itself is getting trapped and pinched in the joint. And if you do some work to loosen the joint and you do some work directly on the tendons to kind of soften them and improve their flexibility, you can get rid of these rotator cuff impingement issues. Yeah, very highly successful.
You're working over the tendon, not the muscles there.
The tendon of the muscle, yep.
The structure, I suppose, yeah.
Yeah, the tendon is typically what produces that sharp stabbing pain in the shoulder when you try to reach or lift overhead or grab a milk jug or whatever it is. And over time, those tendons get thick and inflexible.
Mm-hmm.
And so when things get too inflexible, they start to tear.
Yeah.
Right? Or they thicken up. And then when you raise your arm, that little tendon gets pressed between the two bones and it starts pinching it, which will eventually rupture it and tear it and rupture it. But if you get to it before that happens, or even if it's already torn, a lot of times you can still do a little bit of work and facilitate some good healing and get rid of the issue without all of the other major interventions.
Yeah, very
Someone
good.
Someone told me, Chad, that if you sleep on your arm, if you're kind of like a side sleeper, you end up sleeping kind of end up on your shoulder, that can aggravate or create problems with that you shouldn't be sleeping on your shoulder or out on your arm.
Yeah, I mean, if you're waking up in the morning, you have shoulder pain. That's the term we use is pathognomonic. It really means that you have a rotator cuff issue. That's one of the most common things that people with them will mention is that they have a hard time laying on that side because of the shoulder pain.
Yeah, makes sense. Mm-hmm. Well, anything you do over and over, this is going to cause some kind of stress on something. Sooner or later, it's going to happen. I would guess most people that get to 50, 60 years of age have some sort of thing that happens because of how they sleep, because you get in habits you do the same way every day.
Oh yeah, absolutely. I mean, sometimes it's people can get up and function during the day okay, but it's that nighttime where you're laying down and gravity shifts directions on you that it makes you realize that something's not happy.
Yes, absolutely.
So that brings me, do you recommend a certain kind of mattress or something, or a memory foam, or what works for people?
I'm a big fan of beds you can change, because there's days that you might be stressed and stiff and you need a different level of support than days where you're exhausted and very relaxed. So personally, I have a Sleep Number bed. That's what I like. I can, you know, change it day to day.
Seems like a lot of money for air, though. I mean, wow.
Yeah, I think there's more options out there now in terms of that. But, you know, going in and getting one bed that's going to be one way, that's going to slightly change over time, I just don't think those work as well for people.
Do you change your number fairly often?
I do, yeah.
Oh, okay. I thought people set it where they liked it and they were good forever, but maybe not.
Yeah, mine changes, like I said. If I'm very stressed and I'm stiffer, then I need a different level of forgiveness with my bed.
Yes.
So,
yeah.
I think that's the Ron Popeil bed you were thinking of. Set it and forget it, Stephen.
Yeah. All right, Chad, good stuff. If people want to find out more about you and how you might be able to help with any of the things that are going on with them, how do they do that?
Fastest, quickest way is use your mobile or electronic device. Pulse up on theclinicnow.com.
Okay, theclinicnow.com.
Yep.
All right, Dr. Z, he's the man, the answer man when it comes to things that are getting in the way of all the fun stuff that you like to do. Get a hold of him and he'll get you set up. Him and his team are great over there at the clinic. Good to see you, man. Thanks for stopping in.
Bad. Great to be here.
Dr. Chad Zimmerman from the clinic. Here helping us feel a little bit better, and who can't get behind that?